Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to the Corbett Reports. I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. And for today's edition of Solutions Watch, boy, do I have a doozy of a conversation for all of you out there who may, and I would hope there aren't too many people in the Corbett Report audience who are in this predicament, but may be in the process of upgrading, or is that downgrading to Windows 11 and finding out all of the Copilot AI spyware, bloatware nonsense that has infested the latest edition of Microsoft's operating system? Why on earth would you be on that in the first place? But if you are in that predicament, well, maybe you shouldn't be. And what are the options? What are the alternatives? What else could you possibly do other than continue to feed Microsoft your time and your energy and your resources? Well, there is something called Linux that you may have heard about over the years. And if you are interested in at least finding out about that switch to Linux, I have a guest today who will be able to help you do that. You should know him and love him from his work, if not only from our previous conversation in 2021 on how to de-Google. You will also, of course, know today's guest from his many websites and social media presence on Odyssey and Rumble and X and Patreon and Locals and some Google-owned monstrosity called YouTube that nobody uses, I'm sure. And he also has a website, braxtech.net. He has a brax.me. All of these links will be in the show notes for those who are becoming acquainted with today's guest. But he is Rob Braxman, a.k.a. the Internet Privacy Guy. Rob, it's been a long time since we talked. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us again.
And thank you for inviting me. Thank you. It's always enjoyable to go to your show.
Yeah.
What can excellent. I help you with today?
Well, well, that is a good question. And as I alluded to there, yes, of course, Windows 11 and all of the nonsense that is associated with it is in the news these days. But for those people who have been living under a rock for the past several months or several years or a couple of decades, what is the problem with Windows anyway? Why would anyone want to switch from that wonderful operating system in the first place, Rob?
Yeah, that very wonderful operating system. I actually had this, I wish I'd shown this clip of the Microsoft AI CEO, Mustafa Soleiman. He's the CEO of Microsoft AI. And he pushed back on social media saying, why is it that people are not appreciating the Microsoft AI? Why are they pushing back? Why are they not understanding the benefits of Copilot? And so I flashed a video of him saying that this technology will see what you see, know what you know, hear what you hear, and interact with you like it's your companion. And he's like, come on. I mean, you know, we have a bit of a common sense thing here. And when somebody says, see what you see, maybe they don't understand what that really means in practice, but it really means literally there's an AI watching everything you do, seeing what you see. In fact, think of it as a camera sitting on your shoulder, except it's running on your computer. It's called Windows Recall. And it's pretty crazy. Can you imagine a program taking screenshots every 10 to 15 seconds, capturing the data on the screen and analyzing it through the AI, through the LLM, and saying, oh, I see you're on James Corbett's site. I see you're clicking on this thing here. And I see you're also looking at cars.com. You're going to buy a car. This combination of different things that you might be doing that someone is actually watching you do. And come on. I mean, I don't understand what's up with Microsoft, but is that something that appeals to the common person? What do you think?
I don't think so. And I think I have seen that reflected in almost all of the coverage that I have been reading about Windows 11 and Copilot and all of this upgrade that Microsoft is attempting to force down people's throats. Maybe that's reflective of the types of sources I'm reading, but I'm reading tech blogs and others, and I don't think anyone is really happy with this, except, as you say, the befuddled Microsoft execs. Why wouldn't people want this?
This is more complicated than what I'm actually saying. And, you know, I'll lead you to some facts here that are kind of scary. This is tied to the TPM, the Trusted Platform Module. BitLocker, Secure Boot, all of that part of Windows. Attestation, maybe you've heard some of these terms before, maybe not. But because they're actually duplicating what is in your mind, watching your thoughts through whatever your interactions are on screen, and the LLM, the AI, is watching you and making notes about what you're doing and storing it into this SQLite database file into one of the folders on your computer. It's text-based, by the way. It's storing, it's understanding your what you're doing and translating into text. Storing to this database. And now Microsoft says, okay, now that we've duplicated your life into the computer, now we got to take all these extra precautions to make sure nobody hacks it. So now we're going to institute something called TPM, Trusted Platform Module, which is a requirement for Windows 11. We're going to encrypt your drive with BitLocker. We're going to do secure boot so you can't boot anything else. But what they didn't tell you is that all of this is tied to your Microsoft ID. And if someone ever wants to decrypt your drive, like a government, they just have to go to Microsoft because it's tied to your Microsoft ID where your BitLocker recovery key is there. So they can, in fact, still unlock your drive. So I don't know what the point is, because the real point is for you to trust that you're going to put your brain in the computer. And so this, all this association with this TPM, secure boot, all of this is all tied to that. But it's actually worse, because one of the things that TPM can do is do what is called attestation. And attestation means that any platform, any app, any third party can actually go and verify that your configuration is as they want. For example, they can say, I'm not going to run my application on your device if you're not in this particular configuration. So for example, if you're running Linux, they might say, okay, we're not going to run. If you're running Windows 10, they might say, okay, we spotted that you're running Windows 10, and we're not going to let you do that because we want you to run AI. So we're going to force you now with this fixed configuration. This is a much more dangerous thing than you can imagine. And by the way, this is not just on Microsoft. This is the same thing that's happening on Apple Intelligence. Apple Intelligence hasn't announced yet because they kind of pulled back. So I don't know what they're revising it to, but that was the original plan. And then, of course, Google Gemini, this is already the plan. They already have their own chips to do this same concept as a TPM. It's called a TEE. Same exact methodology, do attestation. Attestation was announced by Google. So now they can force attestation to make sure you're not on a de-Google phone. If you are de-Google, they can say, we're not going to run the banking app. So a lot of European banking apps are now doing that. They're saying, we're not going to run if you're on the Google phone because you failed attestation, and attestation is controlled by Google. So,
and as you point out, this is coming for Apple Intelligence too. In fact, the latest is Apple swaps one ex-Google AI chief for another, because they've sort of stumbled with their AI a bit. So they've swapped out one ex-Googler for another, but it's going to amount to the same thing.
People may forget that Microsoft is using OpenAI for all this. Microsoft is a big partner in OpenAI. And Apple is using OpenAI. So actually, the technology used by Apple and Microsoft should be the same. They have the same hooks. So you can expect they'll have the same capabilities. How they implement this, see what you see, may be a little bit different. But Apple is already doing see what you see even now with this media analysis, the photo analysis, the running on iPhones and Mac OS. So they're already analyzing your media and storing it into the same kind of Microsoft Windows Recall kind of equivalent thing. But the Windows Recall is just much more subversive because it actually watches everything. The Apple version currently, the one that's not part of Apple Intelligence, but the one that exists, is only watching your media. So if you take a photo, it's going to watch that. If you download a photo, it'll watch that. It's basically watching your photo library, whereas the Microsoft one is watching your screen. So it doesn't care if it's text, photo, whatever. It's going to capture it. It's going to analyze it and say, I saw you. You went on this website. And by the way, let's pull this into a big picture so you understand why you need to go to Linux, because this is really kind of the point. The problem here with all these OSs, I'm talking Google, Apple with Apple Intelligence, and Android, the standard Android, the production Android, is that the see what you see technology is really based on the idea of an AI companion, meaning embedded AI, meaning they force the AI on you. This is completely different from you going to, OpenAI directly, ChatGPT, going to Grok, going to Anthropic, one of those web kind of interfaces. This is completely different. This is embedding the AI into the machine. And that's what makes it different. And now the way that this is progressing, every one of these production OSs will have an embedded AI. It has it now, but Apple being the unreleased version yet, but Google and Microsoft are now in production. But there's kind of an interesting exception to this. And the exception is that Linux does not have an embedded AI. It is the only one that does not have an embedded AI and will likely not have an embedded AI. Now, it could use elements of AI in search or whatever, like located elsewhere. It wouldn't surprise me if, for example, kind of like using a browser like Brave and it has some AI search, kind of like using Grok that has AI search. That's different. This is different than an AI companion watching you. And that's coming, and it's already here, and is so disturbing to actually realize that I myself do not delve into Windows 11 anymore. It's a scary moment every time I turn on Windows 11.
Yeah. It has become a toxic environment. I suppose it always was, but it's just getting worse and worse. But as I say, Rob, I think the majority of my audience are clued on, switched on people who know a thing or two, at the very least, about privacy and are concerned about it. But having said that, I don't have a necessarily tech-focused audience. So let's start absolutely from the ground up. There is an alternative that exists. It is called Linux, but some people don't even know exactly what Linux is. Get us started here on the absolute basics. What is Linux and why should people switch to it?
Okay, so let's start with the basics here. I got a computer, some random computer, let's say, some laptop that used to have Windows. I put Linux into it, and I handed it to a family member who does not really know anything about computers and said, here, use this. Use your browsing, your email, your whatever you normally do on the computer. Watch your YouTube, whatever you normally want to do. Here it is. And guess what? This is a Linux computer. The average person doesn't notice any difference. They don't really care. And this is funny because the way that you hear about Linux on the internet is like, oh my gosh, this is so complicated. It's so weird. It's I have to go on the command line and type all these whatever commands. And it's like, I don't know what kind of craziness you're talking about. Once you set it up, and you can buy it even, they sell Linux computers. I mean, it has Windows, and you click on it, and you just need to know where the buttons are. There's a settings button, and you can do all your settings, adjust your screen, do all that. Then all of your apps, your browsers, your email, it's all of that's even built in. Even the VPN is built in. You don't really have to do anything extra. And people are actually, I don't know what it is. It's like the negative publicity over the years that is really incorrect. I mean, there's nothing really unusual about Windows. For example, if I shift a person from a Mac to Linux to Windows, yes, they all are different. I mean, you know, they have slight differences. But to be honest with you, you can switch it around. For example, on Linux, I want it to look more like a Mac or Windows with the button, the icons on the bottom. So I move my icons to the bottom. I put a screensaver on. And aside from the fact that the Windows one, you click on the bottom with the start, the Windows icon on Linux, you click on the upper right in some versions of Linux. And other than that, it's not really that different. I mean, what do you do differently? You click on Windows, you're moving them around. I mean, it's the same interface. You type on things. And if you're not a computer user, if you're not a heavy computer user, you're not a power user, you're not going to care. It's just the browser side is exactly the same. I mean, if you use a browser, what's the difference between using a browser on Linux or on Windows or even on a Mac? They're exactly the same. What about my email app? Okay, I use Thunderbird. Thunderbird behaves the same on Windows, on Linux, on Mac. There's just, for the most common things you got to do, there's not much difference.
Okay, Rob, but let me push back on you on this, because here was my first experience with Linux. This must have been something like 25 years ago. My computer programmer brother convinced me Windows is garbage. Yeah, we're going to switch this computer over to Linux. So we did. And one of the very first things that I attempted to do on my new Linux system was to watch a DVD on the DVD player. And
oh, gosh.
Nope. Yes. Can't do that. You're going to have to crack it. You're going to have to use ZCSS or whatever. And I was like, what? I just want to watch a DVD. I can't do that on Linux. So I went back to Windows. That, to my great shame, but that was 25 years ago, to be fair.
Yes. So that's a little bit different problem. That's even a problem even on Windows. So it's not specific to Linux, but let me explain that problem, because that's actually a very basic one, and it's common. And I'll give you some advice to prevent some of this, because you know it has to do with the patents and copyrights and all that. And the word is called a codec, you know, coder decoder, which is used to decode video and MP3, MP4, all that stuff. All that good stuff we watch as media, and there are different formats, AVI, you know, you can name all the different formats available to you, and there's H.264, H.265, you know, we're people who do video because we do streaming, and so we're familiar with some of these terms. We don't necessarily understand what that necessarily means, but it's a protocol, and somebody owns it. And the problem is that because they own it, they say, well, you can't pre-install it in the system. And they make it really difficult. You can't pre-install it. So that was the old days. Now, some of this has been put in the public domain now. So a lot of it is actually working right off the bat. And if you use, for example, Ubuntu, it's actually, they have a checkbox that says, install media codecs, and it will pre-install all that, and that actually eliminates a big chunk of the headaches from the old days. Now, there's still issues. Have you heard of Widevine?
I don't believe I have.
Okay, so when you run Netflix on your browser, or if you run it on your phone, certain things don't work. And it says, sorry, you got to use Widevine. And then Widevine doesn't work. And there you go. And then you got to figure out, how do I install Widevine? And, you know, then all of the related problems to that, because the world makes it complicated. What is Widevine? It's a DRM, digital rights management. So they do encryption so that you can't steal the streaming. So they do DRM on on your Netflix, your Prime Video and all that. So that's, you know, this is not specific to Linux. It's just that, you know, Apple may just pay the guy and say, I'll just pay you and don't bother us. Microsoft may say, yeah, we'll just pay you and then you don't bother us. No, well, nobody's going to pay on Linux. It's free. So Linux can say, well, we can't include it by default. So we have to do this extra step where you make the decision to download it. It's on you, not on us. We don't distribute it. So that explains that kind of problem. And there's many little problems.
And as like I say, that was a 25-year-old plot problem. The real laugh is no one uses DVDs anymore because physical media, that's so old school. But anyway.
Yeah, but it's, like I said, it's transformed into streaming problems.
Streaming, yeah.
Exactly. Same thing.
It's the same thing. Same intellectual property nonsense.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Let's get into the real meat and potatoes of this because that's a minor quibble. But you've already raised the specter of Ubuntu and there's Mint and Debian and what? There's all these different flavors of Linux. Can you explain that?
They should understand that. That's this is the biggest negative of Linux, actually, to be honest with you. It's this disjointed, segmented, and it's competitive, whatever. And it feels like, why are there 500 Linuxes? Why is that? Actually, there's only one Linux. Linux is made by linux.org. There's only one. And it's managed by Linus Torvald, you know, the guy that wrote Linux. So it's called the Linux kernel. And that's the actual thing that that runs your computer. What happened was Richard Stallman created the surrounding architecture of Linux to make Linux much more usable. And it has all the, you know, the terminal, for example, that's actually Richard Stallman, all the different commands on the terminal commands, you know, that some of us who do Linux understand and know, that's also from Stallman. And then that has progressed. That's called GNU, G-N-U. So GNU is Richard Stallman's baby. And GNU has expanded. It includes now all the graphics, the UI, the Windows, all that. It's actually part of GNU. It's not even part of Linux, which is a distinction you most people don't even know. There are actually two open source projects. There's Linux and there's Richard Stallman's GNU. So what happened is people modified GNU. It's weird pronunciation. I know GNU. Why GNU?
GNU is not Unix. What does GNU stand for? GNU is not Unix.
GNOME is not Unix or something like that. Because even GNOME, you know, what you normally say is GNOME is pronounced GNOME. Because, you know, Richard Stallman wants to make sure that he's included. He doesn't want to be excluded. So the original Linux name and the official Linux name, which nobody uses, is called GNU Linux. So it's actually GNU Linux. Okay? So the Linux police, if I ever went on the internet and it's called a Linux, I'm going to be attacked. And they're going to say, oh, you know, they're going to swear at me, right? Because it's GNU Linux. So what happened was that all these people said, well, it's open source because, you know, Richard Stallman made it open source. So they all modified GNU. So nobody modifies the Linux side because that's by Linus Torvalds and that's original. It's just one copy of that. But everybody modifies GNU. And this has gotten into what you hear now as Debian, Arch, Manjaro, Ubuntu, Mint, Pop OS. I mean, there's 10 million varieties, right? Zorin. And those are all called distros or distributions, and they're actually modifications of GNU. So they can organize GNU any way they want. It's completely open source. They can change how they...
So if we're talking to people who are brand new to Linux, what would you suggest? What distribution would you suggest?
Exactly. This is so important. And if you see, if you watch my videos, I always say the same thing, and I get a lot of flack from it. So I'm going to give you the advice, and I'm going to get a lot of flack, but I'll explain myself, okay? I'm going to tell you right now that if you're new to Linux, you must, and I use the word must here, you must use Ubuntu. Must. Okay, that's pretty strong, and people are going to say, well, Ubuntu is, you know, privacy invading, and they're going to come up with a long list of all that. I'm going to now refine what I just said. If you're new to Linux, use Ubuntu. Once you've run Linux and you know it works on your computer, you can then say, I'm going to change over to Xorin. I'm going to change over to Mint. I'm going to change, because those probably the two major ones that most people are going to choose are Xorin and Mint. And that's fine. But you should start with Ubuntu. Now, why is that? Because they don't understand the infrastructure of Linux. Because Linux is actually made of distros, as I said, but run by different companies. So some of these distros are big, run by big companies. For example, on one side, the infrastructure is made to run for enterprises, like Red Hat and all that. So that's a different family. And they're made for enterprise machines and enterprise servers and maintained by Red Hat, which is another big company. And they, you know, are specialists in enterprise support. And they provide the support and they modify Linux accordingly. For the other side, which is the most common, is Ubuntu. Ubuntu is run by Canonical. And Canonical takes another line of Linux distros called Debian. And Debian is then modified by Ubuntu, by Canonical, into the distro we call Ubuntu. But the thing that's important here is Canonical is a big company. And one of the things that Canonical does that is really important is they test all the machines. They actually have a lab, and they actually certify machines that are compatible with Linux. And if they find one that's not compatible, they go negotiate with the company that made the device and said, hey, can you give us the drivers to make that work? And so they bypass Linus Torvalds, and they actually say, okay, we're going to go install these non-open source drivers and add it to Ubuntu just to make sure it works. And people are going to complain because it's not open source, it's this and that. But, you know, the question is, will it work? So the problem with Linux is that many new computers will not work. If you just take a brand new computer, you buy it from the store, and you say, I'm going to load Linux on this, and you start with Mint, it may not work. But Ubuntu likely will work, because at least somebody made the effort to put the drivers in there. So for this reason, if you want to know if it's going to be if it's going to be Linux compatible, you have to test with Ubuntu, because they have all the drivers. And Mint, Xorin, all of that take from Ubuntu, but Ubuntu has the most latest. So if you want to make sure that it works, you better not attempt to do this and get discouraged and say it doesn't work. It may work on Ubuntu. Now, once Ubuntu works, then you can decide you'll use some other distro. You can do that. So it's your choice that comes later. Some people like Xorin. Why? Have you ever used Xorin? Do you use Linux?
I've never used Xorin. No.
Do you use Linux? What do you use?
I have Arch Linux.
Oh my gosh. You're hardcore. Okay. That's hard. Not for beginners. Okay. No Arch Linux for beginners. So anyway, Xorin, some people like Xorin. I don't, but some people like Xorin. And the reason I like Xorin is because it looks like Windows. they shape the Windows, the taskbar, to look like the settings. It looks like Windows. I mean, that's their main claim to fame. It looks like Windows. And in my sense, the closer it looks to Windows, the more I hate it. So I don't like it to look like Windows.
Fair enough.
So I have the opposite reaction to that. Then the other one, very, very popular with newbies, is Mint. Some people, you know, say, oh, well, it's a simpler interface. I don't particularly think that. I think I like the consistency of Ubuntu more. But it's up to you. I mean, my only reason for pushing Ubuntu initially is to make sure the computer works, because that's the main problem. Now, having said that, let me just make some general statements about Linux for people who don't know how this works. If you have an older computer, like 5 years and older, there's 99% chance that they will be Linux compatible. By that time, the drivers will have been released and put into mainline Linux. So it takes a while for that to happen. For example, you've heard of the Snapdragon Qualcomm computers, Copilot PCs, Windows. You've heard of those?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And those are ARM-based Windows. And I said, oh, this is exciting, because, you know, there's a ARM-based, kind of like the M chips of Apple, and they're going to run Windows. So this is cool if they can run Linux. Guess what? They're not Linux compatible. So don't ever buy those for Linux. Do not buy those. It's been a year. It's still not Linux compatible. How long will it take them to be Linux compatible? I don't know. It's not been prioritized by Qualcomm. So that's not good news. So maybe a couple of years from now, they will be. 5 years from now, I'm sure it will be. But right now, it's not. So I don't want those. I would never choose those. You know, the Intel Lunar Lake, the new Intel laptop chip,
yeah,
which I have. That's a current computer I'm using. You know, Linux works fine to a point, and the point where it has a limit is gaming. So the graphics chip is powerful enough for me to do my video editing on it, which is kind of neat because it's a lighter computer and it can do video editing no problem. But the Linux game, Steam gaming hangs up because there's not a compatible driver, or the driver is buggy for the graphics. And this is where you start complaining about Linux and say, oh, it doesn't work in Linux, and, you know, all that, right? Because they're going to complain about the drivers. Well, you know, that gets resolved over time. But unfortunately, the Linux rule is you can't just put something on Linux. In order for something to be supported by Linux, it has to go through Linus Torvald. It's called mainlining. So Linux Torvald has to agree that your driver is acceptable, and then it'll be put in. But in order for him to agree, it has to be open source. Well, guess what? NVIDIA doesn't open source. So they give you a raw driver, and then they say, well, here it is. Well, we don't know if it's buggy or not, but here it is. And no one can check it because nobody can look at the source code. And that introduces all these problems. So the people with drivers that are not open source have to go through a different cycle and have to be approved by certain committees. And that causes delays. And this is why we have this problem with Linux not supporting new devices, because of source code not being released. If you release the source code, it would be accepted immediately. So that's
for people who are interested in this. I know you do have a recent video on finding a Linux compatible computer for $200 or more.
Yes. I mean,
so it's not going to break people's bank to find a Linux compatible computer.
So let's talk about that, because that's such an important tip. And when I said you can buy a Linux computer or a computer that's going to run Linux for $200, I'm actually talking about a very respectable machine. I'm not talking about some garbage. In fact, you know, I believe in my own advice. I actually bought two. I bought two of the machines I recommended, which is a Lenovo X1 Carbon, which is the high end. I have a brand new one. You know, the brand new ones cost like, what, $3,000. And you buy it used 5 years old, 6 years old, and they're like 200. And the reason is they're corporate machines and they're leased for 3 years. And after the 3 year lease, they're dumped on the market. And they're dumped in the market in such huge quantities that, you know, the, and they are like excellent machines. They're like ultra portable with, you know, i7s. And I mean, they're still pretty powerful. I just got one. It was an Intel 10th gen. That's only 5 years old for 250 or something. And it's like, seriously, I mean, it's a five-year-old computer, but it's more powerful than some of the computers they're selling now. So there's no real excuse to say, well, I can't do this because it's so expensive. Because with Linux, you do not have to buy a new computer. It's one of the things about Linux is you don't have to. You can use your old computer, the computer you're running Windows now, and convert it to Linux. Or just take it easy. Get a $200 one, put Linux on it, get used to it. Now you have two when you're ready.
You know, also, I'm not sure if we actually stated this outright, but we should put this on the record. Linux is free for people who don't know. You don't have to buy Linux.
So. And the apps are free. Not only is Linux free, the apps are free. So your apps for word processing, for even photo editing, for video editing, for obviously browsers are free, but there's really nothing you got to pay for on Linux. Everything is always free.
Let's talk about applications, because obviously that's something that people will have a concern. Well, but I like this application. Will it run on? For example, I do a lot of video editing. What do you use for video editing?
I use DaVinci Resolve. Now, I'm going to be frank with you. On my particular computer, DaVinci Resolve does not run. This new Intel Lunar Lake doesn't run because DaVinci requires a discrete NVIDIA card. It's the way they programmed it. So I have another computer with DaVinci installed with an NVIDIA card, and it's also not running for whatever reason, or it's unstable. It's crashing all the time, and I really don't have time to debug that. So what I do here, and this is an advice I give to people with this problem, is you dual boot. You have a computer that can switch from Windows to Linux. So in my case, and likely in a case like yours, if you're going to do this, I use Windows only for video editing, which is, you know, however many hours a week that I got to do that, which is, you know, maybe 3 hours a week. And that's it. I have no reason to go to Windows. So I run the video editing. I don't do anything while I'm doing video editing. So I'm not interfering with Windows Recall. And it can spy on me editing my video all day. It's not going to learn anything because it's public. It's a public video. And then when I'm done, I reboot the computer and then go back to Linux. So that's dual boot. Dual boot requires some very specific steps to do, which I made a video for. And yes, it's not the easiest thing to do, but it's quite doable. Alternatively, you buy your $200 computer and you have both. You just change computer. And I also do that. I can choose to do video editing on one computer and do my everyday stuff on another computer. The only reason I don't do that is because I like to have the portability of having it on the road. But if you're not technically savvy to do that, then there's no reason why you can't just buy a $200 computer, put Linux on it, and there you have two choices all the time.
Let's talk about dual boot a little, because that does seem like a lot of people want to dip their toe in the water and see how it goes before they make the full-on switch. But as you say, you have a recent video up, dual boot is easy until it isn't. And Microsoft is obviously continually trying to interfere with people's ability to dual boot. So what do you have to say about that process?
Well, if you're running Windows 10, for example, which a lot of people don't want to go to Windows 11, so they're going to run Windows 10. Dual boot is easier in Windows 10. The Windows 10 is not doing these tricks that Microsoft is doing in Windows 11. So they should have an easier time with Windows 10. It should be just basic. You don't have to do the extra parts I do for Windows 11. But It's not, you know, it's not rocket science, but, you know, it does. There are certain things that are kind of painful on Linux. And let me just tell you kind of the most basic one. Making the USB stick. I mean, would you believe that that it stops most people from converting to Linux, the USB stick. So, which is really funny because what is that? Well, Linux is installed using a USB stick. You stick it into the USB port and you boot to the USB stick. And then it goes through. You can test Linux even if you don't install it permanently. It's called live CD mode. And so you can actually run Linux without destroying your computer. You can just run Linux on the side temporarily. And people say, well, I don't know how to make a USB stick. Because you got to flash the USB stick. And they stop right there. And it's funny. It's so simple, but they got stopped. So I said, okay, I'll offer you USB stick. So I have on Braxme, there's a store. And you can buy a USB stick. But it really isn't that complicated, but they, you know, they stop there. So you can't believe how many people bought USB sticks from me. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I made no profit from it. It was such a big pain. It was such a big headache. And people said, I need a USB stick because they can't figure out how to make a USB stick. So aside from me, there are other places that do sell USB sticks for Linux, for whatever distro you want. So, you know, it is available, and I checked another site that had it, and it costs about the same. So, because you know we have the same sources, nobody makes money from doing this. It's more of a community service than anything. But you're
the Johnny Appleseed of Linux, spreading it around the world. So thank you for that service.
Yeah,
that does, of course, raise the question of Brax Tech and the Brax privacy phone, Brax 3. Can you tell people about the work that you're doing there?
Yeah, so I'm in the privacy field and I'm looking for a solution to privacy. And I've been partnering with certain groups to produce phones. We 3 years ago, we made a Brax 2 phone. And I sold that on my store, and that was successful. But it was so successful that I basically partnered with a company that made that phone, and we now made a Brax 3 phone, which is a project on Indiegogo.com. It's still there. The project is still running, and that sold out. We did a crowdfunding campaign. It got released in the summer. And it's sold out. It completely wiped out. So we ordered a second batch, and so there is a second batch on Indiegogo right now, and that's gonna get released in February. Now we changed the config a little bit, so there was a delay to change some of the to improve the Brax 3. And I have a Brax 3 somewhere. I think I have one here, and really it's. It's such a high quality. It's such a high quality phone. I mean, it's not what you would, you know, assume to be like some cheap phone. It's actually people were surprised. That's why it sold so fast, and it's very solid. It's so anyway. That's on Indiegogo.com. It's very cheap too, and. Then because of this success with this, we're actually expanding the company, or Brax Tech is. I'm just a partner in that. And we're going to come up with a Linux tablet. So that's next year's plan. I think we're going to have a Indiegogo crowdfunding for that in later December. And then this will be natively running Linux. So you can actually, you don't have to install Linux. You can just buy the tablet for cheap. More than $200, but you know, it's a brand new device. But it will be cheap and run like a laptop, but it'll be a tablet. you know, a fairly big tablet, and that will be on Indiegogo.com. So, and we're going to be making privacy devices like this for foreseeable future.
Well, obviously something that people are looking for, people are interested in. I'm sure there will be people who are interested more in this topic. We've really just broached the topic here today. As I say, you've got a roadmap to Linux with multiple parts up on your video channels right now. So I will link to that if people are interested in really getting into the nuts and bolts of this process. But is there anything else you'd like to say in general to people who are at least thinking of making the switch to Linux right now?
Yeah, the biggest fear is the apps. And I just want to make sure that people know that for most people, unless you're doing specialty things like CAD cam video editing or such things, the main issue is apps. And even the gaming side, which is really one of the main reasons people don't want to go to Linux, is gaming. And Steam, which actually runs on Linux and supports something called the Steam Deck, which runs Linux, actually says that 80% of the games run on Linux as is. So it really, you know, cuts down on a lot of these negative feedback about what you can or cannot do in Linux. To be honest with you, once you get used to it, you forget that, you know, what you did on Windows. You forget what you did on Mac OS. It's not that big of a deal. Make the jump.
Excellent. Well, Rob, we could talk about this for hours and hours, but I think we'll leave it here for today. I am looking forward to hearing more about the Linux tablet and other such projects in the future. I'm sure, I hope we will get updates, and let's not leave it 4 years till the next update, shall we? At any rate, we'll leave it there for today. All the links will be in the show notes so people can go check it out and support your work. But we'll leave it there. Rob, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.